You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 36.
This episode, Bleeding Heart.
Everybody to the Green Lantern Corecast. I'm your host Frank Mateo, and joining me today are my faithful co-hosts, Kuhan, the little guy living in some dude's living room right now, I guess.
That dude being my father.
Yeah, some dude. Right? we also have Colton. You know, ever reliable, always present, always capable of giving us something to talk about.
I hope I can do a good job.
Nah. And we also have Eric. Eric's normally, you know, bashful, doesn't really talk that much. Oh, normally in a corner, but he's a good guy. We brought him out here so he could actually like give us whatever he thinks about the DC universe at the moment.
Hey, I like that you could describe us like whimsical characters in a young adult novel written by British people, like The Impossibles or The Neverwends or something. Especially Kuhan, little man living in a strange dude's living room. Yeah, anyway, and his fat friends. Yeah, I'm not fat, by the way. Just so you guys know. Go ahead. Sorry.
And we also have Brandon. Brandon West, our curator of the Flash Museum, always capable of giving us something to talk about, either about Barry Allen's bow ties or Jay Garrick's sleeping disorders.
Hi.
I want to know more about Barry Allen's bomber jacket. I'm so excited about this bomber jacket face.
Can I just say that last week I was a plant, and now I'm a curator? I'm moving up in the world.
No, basically, you just turned into Harry Knowles and Andy Cool News.
Well, and of course, you know, there's our intrepid host, the dazzling adventurer, because I didn't get to say that on my other show, so I'm gonna say it now.
You're nice.
Dazzling. You're dazzling.
References.
Mike.
Dazzling.
Dazzling.
Just because he's
adventurer.
He's sweating and he stands under bright light.
He dazzles and he adventures. What's wrong with that, Brandon?
When does what? He adventure?
He's an
I do
adventure.
It all the time.
When do you curate, Brandon?
Sometimes he goes to somebody's pool. Occasionally he'll drink. Apparently he also has meaningless sex with women. That's an adventure some people on this cast will never have. So
because we all mean it when we have it.
Yeah, you all look at him in the eyes when it happens.
So I think we move on now.
Anyway.
Back shots.
None of that. So we're going to move on. We're going to move to our news section of our cast, where we're actually going to discuss the fact that Warner Brothers is talking about the sequel to the Green Lantern movie being more darker and edgier when it is possibly released, even though it's been confirmed that it hasn't been confirmed yet that they are making a sequel. But they are talking about if it actually does occur, it'll be darker and edgier and more violent than ever before.
Well, literally what they said, the VP said that it's going to be – he said if they do it, it's going to have more emphasis on action, more space stuff, darker and edgier. And then
well,
I think
we give the quote.
I'll get the quote directly. Yeah.
Yeah. Warner Brothers Group President Jeff Robinoff said, "To go forward, we need to make it a little edgier and darker with more emphasis on action. And we have to find a way to balance the time the movie spends in space versus on Earth." End quote.
What was the other quote?
And what was the other quote that subsequently came a few days later? Time Warner chairman and CEO Jeff Bukes was clear, and he said it did not live up to expectations, fell fairly far short of those. Sorry, wait, that.
And that we will be deciding that in due course on the sequel.
So basically, it's darker and edgier or non-existent.
Right.
Well, it's more likely non-existent, but it's like
darker, darker.
Last time, the week it came out, they were saying we want to do a sequel. It's going to be loaded. And it's one of those things where every single time a movie doesn't do well, now they're like a superhero movie. They're like, it's going to be darker and edgy next time. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, you know, it's like when Spider-Man 3 came out, you know, that's dark and edgy and nobody liked it. You know, there was haircuts that were postmodern and everybody was wearing mascara. It was a very dark and edgy movie, but nobody liked it, you know.
Alternatively, in 10 years, we're going to finally get the sequel starring the Zack and Cody. I don't know.
Though, in all fairness, looking at Amazing Spider-Man, it definitely looks darker and edgier, quote unquote. You know, it also looks like, you know, really pretentious nonsense. So, I mean, what do you know?
Fair. Jeff did mention that he's not concerned. Let's quote him again. I'm not concerned about DC's strategy, and that they'll be a major contributor in the years to come.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got to think that they're – I mean, again, everybody gets really freaked out about this stuff, but it's like you got to think they are going to try to farm out more franchises, regardless of whether they take 10 years or they take, you know, 3 years to get the next one of these out. They have to because they're out of franchises, and that's kind of the name of the game at this point. And they own the DC characters. So.
I mean, yeah, they only use DC because they already own it, but – no one's ever strapped for franchises. Warner Brothers is the biggest studio around, so they can buy anything they want. They just bought 2 indie comic books for a movie, so I don't know why they're not worried about DC at all.
Well, they got to buy something to replace the Harry Potter money machine.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is that they're gonna see a big drop whether they like it or not, and you know, you might see a couple more desperation franchises pumped out. I mean, I remember when I was in high school and The Matrix was coming out and Lord of the Rings was coming out, and that was kind of it. And then because of those 2 movies, every single friggin', you know, franchise known to man was coming out with these gigantic movies every summer, and half of them tanked, you know, and then we got that whole thing where trilogies would start and then never be completed, you know, because it's like you really can't shoot 3 movies in advance, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I hope now that DC is more involved in DC Entertainment, and they're like more upfront about the fact that they're trying to be a multi, you know, media organization as opposed to just being shitty comics that no one ever reads made into movies that people sometimes don't go to see. You know, it gives me more confidence that we'll get some cool stuff out of it. But, you know, I mean, again, if their first and best effort was Green Lantern, and, you know, I mean, people don't seem to remember. I mean, people get freaked out because Geoff Johns himself specifically said, you know, if this movie doesn't do well, we're kind of up Schitt's Creek here and stuff. And, you know, I don't think anybody's really believe that's the case, you know, but if their chief creative officer is saying it, I think there's one more reason to fire the guy. I don't know. I mean, just if you're being a business professional.
You're still trying to push for that, you know, Geoff Johns being fired deal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, think about, like, when Hulk came out. When Hulk came out, and it did very well, but it didn't perform to everybody's expectations. So they said the next sequel is going to be darker and edgier and have more action and stuff. And, you know, 3 years later, a sequel came out that was funnier, lighter, and did have more action, you know. So this is the kind of shit they say to spin the movie. And, you know, good for the CEO for saying basically, like, yeah, you know, we're probably not going to make a sequel, but whatever, you know.
We'll see. We shall. Anyway, moving on besides that, we have confirmation as to who the Star Sapphire is in the new Guardians for the relaunch of the Green Lantern New Guardian book, and it's Fatality. Fatality has been confirmed as a Star Sapphire for that team book. Now, if anyone saw anyone else actually being the Star Sapphire for that book, I'm sorry for you. It wasn't going to be Mirai or Miri, whatever her name is, again, you know, with her craziness.
Yeah,
well, I think a lot of the speculation started with Carol Ferris, with Hal being deringed or whatever is it in Green Lantern. People thought, oh, well, here's the perfect way to keep Carol in the spotlight. She'll move over to New Guardians and we'll play off the dynamic of Kyle and Carol instead of Hal and Carol. And then there was the coloring mistake on the initial cover that had Fatality depicted as a Carol Ferris skinned woman. Yeah.
Can I just say that I just love the mental image of how I have his range for 5 minutes. She's like, yeah, he's not that interesting without it. Oh, come on, Kyle, let's get out of here.
Well, I think it's interesting because it's definitely Fatality. Now, I kind of like that they redesigned her costume. You know, she looks now like kind of like Dazzler, you know, which is bizarre, but it will be to DC to come up with their own ideas and et cetera for Tyler Kirkman. But It's funny because it went along with this whole thing where DC was like, we're going to try to desexualize our characters a little bit more. That was a scuttlebutt anyway. And now they're kind of going back on all that, and they've taken away one of them's pants. And all the solicited covers for, like, the issue threes and the new villains, a couple of them, you know, Bleez is, I don't know if – I guess we can talk about this really quick. There's a solicited cover for Red Lanterns number 3 where Bleez is literally rubbing her breasts with pouring blood, and it's kind of like, DC, Jesus Christ. Like, what is the point of you, DC? Like, how stupid can you be? Like, it literally is 2 months into your initiative to get – to transform audiences away from what they think comic books are. And this is – that's 101 what people think comics are, like juvenile, you know, perverted bullshit, you know, but whatever. I'm not even going to rant on that. But anyway, it's just – it's at least she's got pants. At least Fatale got pants.
Well, isn't she supposed to be a reference to a specific person in history who bathed in blood?
No, please? No.
No.
No. Oh.
But at least that situation.
I mean, there is a woman in history who's historically, like, the legend around her was that she bathed in virgin's blood and stuff. But, I mean, there's no antecedent that Bleez is connected to her, I believe. Bleez was just a really beautiful woman who got her wings ripped off and, you know, was almost sent to a rape dungeon by Sinestro and, you know, killed the guy. That's as far as I know.
And Sinestro's our new hero.
And now, yeah, Sinestro, who hires people who create rape dungeons, is the new protagonist of Green Lantern.
I'm so thrilled. Not really.
Whatever. Yeah, and I guess they – and I guess – I mean, obviously – I mean, I guess none of the other members are really confirmed except in that, you know, what I guess the most confusing bit was when they released the cover for 2 or whatever, and everybody – it looked like Carol Ferris, and I guess everybody else was kind of like, that is – Glomulus is on the team, and Monk is on the team, and Bleez is on the team and stuff.
We discussed this last episode where Jeff and Pete and Eddie Braganza all said at the San Diego panel that the initial cover – was not indicative of who was on the book. And here we get a new cover for that number one issue, and it's the exact same people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, either
the
they're
team could rotate.
Really,
I mean, it, you know, there could be a team rotation thing happening, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it's kind of like, well, why were they lying?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to Fatality. I think she's long overdue for some more screen time, and, I mean, while I would rather have her interact with John just to keep that story going, I don't mind seeing how she plays off of Kyle and the rest of these psycho Lanterns that apparently Kyle would be teaming up with.
Well, he's the leader of all Lanterns.
Well, it'll be a good fit. We'll see what goes on, especially seeing the fact that Kyle and Fatality have had relationships in the past. I mean, she wasn't to do Kyle's run, you know, murder him for, you know, all intents and purposes for something that John Stewart did.
But, yeah, exactly. She's actually a Kyle villain, so she's like Kyle's last living villain, I think, actually. So yeah,
she is actually, unless Sonar is still running around somewhere.
I think somebody killed Sonar.
Huh.
Audience, if you can correct us on the message boards, go to greenlanterncore.com and just let us know.
Yeah.
What the hell happened to Sonar? I'm not looking at Wiki. I'm relying on.
we do get a little bit of Sonar today.
Yeah. That's good. President, we'll talk about that later in the reviews. Right. Aside from that, there has been unconfirmed information of the fact that in when the Blu-ray DVD of the Green Lantern movie comes out, there will be an extended 14 minutes added to the movie. Now, whether or not this is actually true or not, we still don't know. Again, it's an unconfirmed rumor, but if it is, we can't wait to see what they've actually added or what they had on the cutting room floor that we're adding to the movie.
Right. Well, I mean, the rumor itself comes from Amazon UK, and they release solicitation for the Blu-ray as it comes out. They're usually right. I mean, there's no reason to assume it's wrong, unless, you know, it just could be whatever. But it looks like this is kind of the what has happened before when it comes out with DVD release and stuff. So, yeah, it's confirmed that there's an extended cut of the movie that's got an additional 14 minutes. It also extends a certain amount of it also presents a certain amount of DVD extras that look more or less confirmed for all editions of it, or at least the triple play extended edition they're advertising, et cetera. I mean, most of what you'd expect, there's deleted scenes. There's a bunch of making.
No, that's not what we should expect, because we've seen this on every fucking Green Lantern DVD that comes around.
What?
These are the same damn stories. This is a Jeff Johns interview. This is Bruce Timm handpicking.
Sorry, how is this not expected? This is.
Wait, what are you looking at?
You're saying the exact definition of expected, first of all.
Wait, let's
Well, I just said it was expected, yeah. Didn't I?
Yeah, no, you did. And he's like, this is not expected, but you're saying that
well, no,
and
I'm looking at the list I'm looking at, there's no Geoff Johns interview list and there's no Bruce Timm interview list.
Yeah, the list you're looking at is different from the one I'm looking at. So
we have conflicting lists. Yeah.
I got the Play.com list, and the Play.com list says it's got Universe According to Green Lantern. It's got a Green Lantern featurette, a Ryan Reynolds featurette, deleted scenes. It's got a lot of features about transferring, you know, the green screen costume. It's got the Justice League number one digital comic, and it's got a preview of the animated series.
All I want to see is a blooper reel where it just shows, you know, you see Ryan Reynolds' head in a sea of green, and it's just like, but guys, what do I do? I don't know.
Yeah. Or, you know, put him in a Batman costume as a Joker, Captain America costume. Like that, Thor.
Yeah, just put it up and onto him because they've got the green
screen. To be fair to my ignorance. The Amazon listing had previously held the exact same information that was on First Flight. So that's why I was like, yeah. Right. It's probably the easiest way to do it. I mean, I just assume this information is true. It's mostly, like, again, run-of-the-mill, behind-the-scenes stuff. If you're into the special effects, which, you know, I'm sure were amazing for what they were trying to do, then you'd be really into it. But otherwise, there's nothing too groundbreaking there. What are they going to put on
there? Is there a featurette on the mask, just the mask?
Well, they're featuring on the costume itself, so
I mean, it's just the mask, like a 20-minute feature. It's kind of funny about the mask.
Well, when Thor's coming out, it's got its own little short film now. I mean, it's kind of like let's not.
Yeah,
you're comparing apples to gold-plated toilets here, but I mean, it seems kind of like. I mean, well, you can't really expect too much out of it. Considering the movie didn't really do that well, so you're getting a lot for what you're getting. And it does have Justice League number one as a digital comic on it, so that's pretty.
That's a nice. And the animated series, I see. Yeah.
The preview of the animated series.
I'm actually kind of curious here. Which one's the toilet?
Oh, well, gold plated toilets are awesome. Apples are just kind of all right. Yeah.
All right. So, well, we're going to be moving on to our review topic of the show. Yes, we're going to move away from the gold plated toilets.
I love toilets.
And start talking about these delicious, delicious apples. And we're going to talk about the Green Lantern Aftermath number 2, where basically we get the end result of the first issue of Green Lantern Aftermath,
Do you think we should talk about. Should we talk about the last issue of Core again, now that we have all this new information from issue 2 of Aftermath?
No, we don't need to.
I was actually reading it, and then later I was in the shower, and I was like, which issue took place first? And I was like, but they explicitly say it takes place after, but I'm like, well, I guess it does not really matter to me. No, I think we should cover the retroactive first, because I think only one of us has read it, and at least let Colton go into his own thing.
Yeah, so you guys can go get, you know, this is time for your coffee break, or if you want to.
Okay, so Colton,
this is where you make the dangerous turns and stuff. Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna be talking about DC Retroactive Green Lantern the 80s, and on this special issue, we're gonna let Colton lead off and give us his views on the 80s themselves.
It's a great idea, guys. Brilliant idea.
So Colton, on your lead.
All right. Well, for those of you who are John Stewart fans, you'll love this issue. Well, maybe. It opens up with, as I said, John Stewart, and we get to see one of our favorite villains that we all know and love, the Shark, the telepath that he is. It goes to a nuclear missile crisis very quickly, which, you know, you don't just see that touched upon anymore. It's really 80s, perfectly so. I really did like to see his solution. He was actually pretty cunning about it and a little bit cruel in the street with Shark trying to take him down, but I guess that's what heroes do. They suffocate villains to death.
Well, that's how he's beaten. That's how he beat the Shark before. I mean, John Stewart made a big deal. He was able to defeat the Shark quickly because he puts him in a bubble. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Anyways, but that's not the main focus of the story, sadly. It's not a whole issue about the Shark. Instead, it's about the origin of John Stewart, or more specifically, the secret identity. Because he decides to reveal himself to the woman of his woman he thinks he loves, and she seems to like him back. But after a nice romantic encounter, the next morning he wakes up and his identity is all over the news. Quite a thing to wake up to. As it turns out, she's a reporter, and she used him for her big break. Which, of course, is a problematic because she already expressed that she was, you know, relationship with him, so this turns out to make her a prime target for the aforementioned Sonar. What this leads us to is quite an interesting scenario where does he really even want to save her at this point? Because she did just kind of screw him over completely. But he's a hero. He's got to stop the villain, so he does. And promptly throws off any connection to her to save her own life. Although in a way that leaves her crying, so, you know, hero. But yeah, he pretty much just says, yeah, I'm Jon Stewart. Here's my mask. I'm done with it. I'm going on as a hero no matter what. Which was a nice touch because at the start he kind of tries to put himself off like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then he's like, oh, screw it. I'm Jon Stewart. What about it? I'm Green Lantern. Which is a nice touch instead of all those other heroes who are like just going straight. They'd probably just deny it. He goes straight to, yeah, I'm the hero. Ta-da! I like that. I think that's something that makes Jon Stewart different from your average hero. Anyways, I really like the touch about how this makes Jon Stewart different from perhaps the other Lanterns, because I expect like the other Lanterns would act completely different in that scenario. So I like the little intro into Jon's 80s psyche. Back with the classic hair, in fact. Looks good on the guy. But I'm not sure how to take this story because I'm doing it wrong. I like the art. The story's interesting enough, but it's a little bit different style than I'm used to. I mean, it's Jon Stewart with personality. What's going on, man? I guess it's just an 80s thing. But that doesn't last long as we move on from the first story to a classic story, because this is a new story written in 80s style versus the second story, which is actually an 80s story, leading us into Hal Jordan's last hours on as exiled from Earth.
What issue was that?
I don't see an issue number, but it does say that it's written by Lynn Wine and art by Dave Gibbons, and it's called Judgment Day.
I think that's a different one for each person. We don't have to talk about that.
Yeah, I think we don't.
Parents, have you read a lot of the 80s stuff, Lynn Wine, or
No, he has not. I know that.
Most of my Green Lantern experience is either modern or very, very early second volume.
Okay, do we just have like 10 straight minutes of just Colton talking, guys? This does not make for good radio.
We really have to read these issues.
Yeah, we really have to read that. Anyway, aside from any of that, the issue itself. What was your opinion? Was it worth the read? Was it well crafted? What do you think?
For what it is, I think it was a good issue. I mean, I'm not used to this particular era of comics, so certain things are differently told from what I'm used to. But I did enjoy it. I have to admit that.
Right.
Art's good, well written, enjoyable.
Does it make you want to read those issues?
If someone were to give them to me as a gift, I would love them, but not enough to blow large amounts of money on it.
Well, you can always pick up the showcase, and you can always start to read those back issues, and
that's true.
From there.
I think I prefer to go Chronicles, though, because it's Green Lantern. I want to see it in color.
Well, you can always take colored pencil.
So you can see that it's actually a yellow submarine that Hal's afraid of, as opposed to just this.
They I don't know if you ever read those stories. They talk about what's going on a lot. They don't just let it go.
Yep.
It's like 16 minutes and then saying, man, that submarine is the most yellow of all submarines, plus the submarine. And they explain how a submarine works. And then
that sounds like it's right up Colton's alley, bro.
Actually, I was going to say, because I think Frankie was saying you could buy and color it yourself, and I think coloring within the lines is not within the Colton's alley.
I learned how to color lines and I went to transition.
I was always really bad at it because I'm a left brain thinker, which is a myth. But yeah, because I'm a genius, that's why.
That's
today they would call it autism.
I expect to color in the lines too.
I was an abstract artist.
We're going to start talking about the Aftermath issue number 2 of Green Lantern, as I stated earlier.
Talk about abstract art.
No. We're not talking about abstract art at all.
He's making a joke about the issue.
I know.
Can I start off by saying I kind of liked him. I got to assume it's Ransom Getty, and I feel like I always complain about art like this. I thought it was really cool-looking art.
No, you didn't.
I sure did.
No, you didn't.
I sure did. I sure did.
I can't tell if he's sarcastic or not. I'm not.
I thought it was really awesome.
He actually means it.
I thought it was really cool. I thought that was some really cool looking art. I think it was like I always complain about like messy art, but this is the kind of controlled messy art that a lot of guys are not capable of. And I mean, I think there's certain Lanterns that he draws that he brings out angles to them and stuff that you see all the time, but aren't really brought out by artists like Tyler Kirkham and like, you know, I guess Andy Smith draws that one or two pages in this, and you can just tell he's kind of phoning it in and he's making a point to kind of look, have distinct Lanterns look distinct, and I mean, he's got some really cool pictures of Salak in here and whatever the hell the bear prison guard guy is, like same thing, like
Vaz.
That's right, Vaz, and and Morrow and stuff, like just I think it's really cool and I like the way
I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was okay.
Yes.
You did apparently. apparently I thought it was awful. No, it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't the best thing ever.
Plus, there was more acting in the faces. I mean, a lot of times, I'm so used to like.
Yeah, it was very expressive. I can admit that. In a
not
way.
As good as like.
Not good expressive. I mean,
no,
come on.
I
we,
think it was great.
We
I
open
think,
we open good. Up with a full shot of Sarah Ignatius with this
of
one.
Of a man. That is a man.
Oh yeah, no.
It's she, like a real. She looks like Tilda Swinton, actually. So.
Yeah,
who
a man.
Looks like alien?
Tilda Swinton looks like a man, bro.
Don't be like that guy.
Zornick looks more human than Tilda.
Can I just say that I think I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just my pretty heavy liberal sensibilities and people who listen to this show that aren't liberals. First off, stop reading comics. But second off, and don't live. Stop breathing. But anyway, the page where Kyle is using constructs of I suppose it's supposed to be a basketball team shooting hoops and stuff. I don't know. I guess I kind of felt a little racist.
I just want to say the views and opinions of Eric Cahill do not necessarily reflect those of the Green Lantern Corps cast.
I thought the same thing at first. I said, oh, basketball team. Let me check and see if they're all black. Mm-hmm. But the guy closest to the camera, he's got sideburns, and, a lot of the black guys don't wear
it. To be fair, look at like 90% of basketball players in the NBA. It's not
racist. I don't mind him being all black. I don't mind if he makes basketball players that are black. I'm just – I was a little like, maybe you shouldn't have made black guys – cleaning up your garbage.
He's not making the Mavericks.
Did you think it that way?
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't think it was like necessary. I got over it. I wasn't like crazy about it, but it twinged me a little. I was like, I don't know. I mean, I guess Kyle probably follows sports, right? I don't remember. I mean, I'm sure he did. Ron Mars used to write him, so I'm sure he followed sports.
Probably followed baseball.
He didn't follow sports at all.
I don't love the way he draws Kyle's mask, but I like that he tries to make it three-dimensional. It doesn't really look as good as it's looked, and it's inconsistent, but, there's a lot of detail in this art, too, that, like, is completely unnecessary for some bullshit tie-in that, 95% of people are reading just for the sake of necessity, but, I don't know, I mean, like, even the page where they blow up a double splash page with the Sinestro, I guess they're torturing Sinestro or something, and, like, I guess they're trying to get the ring off, why don't they just blow up the ring?
I think that's their way of just pinning him down. I just talked about that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, why don't they cut one of his fingers or hand?
They could have easily have done that to the mask.
Like I said, why don't they just rip off his hand or something? I mean, or destroy the ring. I mean,
would anyone bat an eyelash if they had cut off the hand of a mass murderer just to get the ring off?
It's obviously. I would have done it. It's immoral, but they've murdered people for no reason.
That is not immoral. How is that immoral?
How is it immoral?
He's face Hitler. Cut his hand off.
Well, has a death warrant out for him.
In the American justice system, in America, if a guy was arrested and convicted of murder and on death row, and they just cut off his hand because you guys are totally okay.
Well, no. Restate that, because here's the thing: if he was founded as a murderer by the legal justice system of the United States, and they cut off his hand because he had a gun in his hand. What's the difference? Because he has a loaded weapon on his finger.
I agree that if in the situation if the guy pulled a gun on you and you used your apparently only thing in hand was a giant sword,
exactly.
And you cut his hand off, that's one thing. But that's reactive. I mean, it's different if like the guy has he has like say a screwdriver in his hand and they tie him down and they just rip his arm off. Like
right, but a screwdriver compared to the most powerful weapon in the universe.
He's got a loaded gun. They have the right.
American Corps out of this, and let's focus on the fact that these are the guardians of the universe.
You know who cuts people's hands off as a punishment? Terrorists, and that's fact.
Well, that is true, actually. But I'm just saying, like, the idea is that they're obviously immoral creatures. They obviously impose their own laws in the universe with the death penalty, and they had prisoners that were tied up, and because it was just easier to take care of them that way, they murdered them all. And I don't know why everybody's kind of just hunky dory about that. Nobody remembers Alexander Nero and just getting shot in the head for literally no reason, just because he was there when there was a prison break and stuff. I mean, why is that okay? And there's nobody in the science cells because the Green Guardians all murdered them, and the Green Lanterns are just like flying around fighting crime for them.
I think they're like not even trying to get Sinestro's ring off. They're just like, whatever.
They're scientifically doing something beyond our comprehension, trying to remove
just
the ring.
Flying off. I don't know why they need. Why do they have an Earth-shaped device anyway? Like, I mean, they don't look like they use any wood at all, and yet they have wooden planks that he's tied to. So, and why do they need to make constructs? I mean, from what I understand, they used to make these just big, those big helixes, the DNA helixes, do all their stuff. I mean, there's a lot wrong with
with this, but
well, there's a weird fact that's going on. Weird things are going on in the book that doesn't really make sense. It's a little bit inconsistent with everything else. For a fact of the matter, just the fact that Morrow comes out of the crypt just to warn the other Atlanteans that Krona is being buried there. It's a weird beat to get the other Atlanteans there. But it would have been a little bit better if Morrow was actually confronting Salak about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we don't get that because you had to show the other leading stars of the book to do stuff. Now for like the rest of the issue, it's still very weird. The fact that Kyle has to go and get his girlfriend, and then of course I keep forgetting the line of what Vash Saren says. Get lost, kid. This is no place for bleeding hearts. Trying to reinstate the fact that Kyle is a lover and not a fighter.
No, I he's a liberal.
And then he punches him into a wall.
Kyle's a liberal, and I think he's a pretty open liberal. And I think, there's a deep way to explain
it. No, it's still a weird situation, seeing that Vassar has fought with this guy more times than anything else. There, I still don't understand where this bleeding heart nonsense is coming from.
Well, he doesn't want Sinestro to be killed.
Jeff Johns, what do you think?
No, it's just a literal interpretation of the situation. They're going in to murder someone who's a murderer, and they're like, we got to kill him because he got to be killed. And Kyle says, it's the wrong thing to do to kill someone. Like I just said, it's the wrong thing to cut someone's hand off. And he's like, that's bleeding heart bullshit. Because that is bleeding heart bullshit, regardless of whether he knows Kyle's a badass or
what does that even mean?
Okay, so
bleeding heart is just a term that means that you think more about, you're more sympathetic
like
to the situation than you should be. Yeah, you're more sympathetic to the situation.
No, but here's the thing. There's a level of you shouldn't think to the level of killing Sinestro in cold blood, but yet it's fine if he has been sentenced not just by the Guardians but most of the people of his planet to murder him because to sentence to death because of the things he has done. So you're telling me it's wrong regardless to do that. So incarceration is the only course of action for this.
For the one
character that has gone through lengths to pretty much again, as you said, hire people who create rape dungeons.
Hey, I personally would not mind if somebody ran in and murdered Sinestro. I hate that character personally, but Kyle is trying to defend what he sees as the higher moral authority.
And I completely agree with Kyle.
I'm just saying, like, I think the argument is, like, that's what the argument of the book is. We're not really necessarily supposed to take either side. If we're taking either side, we're really taking the Kyle side because they try to present Vassarn's perspective is like radical and like, oh, isn't that crazy?
Yeah,
just for
and,
shock
yeah,
value.
And remember Kyle's doing all this for the guy who killed his mother.
Yeah, I mean, and there should be something about that there. Somebody should say to him, this guy killed your mother, and he'd be like, well, that doesn't matter. We still don't have any right to just murder the guy and stuff. And they never really showed you what Kyle thought about Sinestro's execution, unless I'm mistaken. I don't believe they ever mentioned it. I think he might have offhand said this guy's wanted for death by the court. But Kyle's actually been pretty sympathetic to Sinestro ever since Sinestro beat the shit out of him and stuff. So maybe that's all it is. Maybe he's got to domesticate Kyle and he's totally okay with it. I want to say one thing. I don't think anybody knows. Raimi Hall was in this issue.
Yes, he was. I actually wanted to make a mention of most of the lanterns later on in the issue were actually weird because the
references to like old ass lanterns. You're like, the fuck are you doing here? Yeah,
aren't you like now like some sort of energy creature or something?
You shouldn't be like that.
Isn't the guy? I keep forgetting the one with the tattoos and the kick ass.
He's dead. He died. That's
it's
right.
His,
the
it's
the,
his,
the
it's
Black
his,
Lantern Anti Monitor killed him, right?
It's,
yeah,
it's his twin brother.
That's right. It's Green Lantern logic, right? So every time they have a Green Lantern that has a unique look, every time they're killed, their equal brother shows up,
or their son or nephew.
I forgot the giant headed guy's name again. I fucking learned that guy's name. Gallia-Zed. It's the Gallia-Zed syndrome. Like every time somebody cool looking dies, they got to bring up their brother.
Now again, here's one of the weird offbeat moments in the book still, and I brought this up there. After the renegade lanterns, I guess you would call them, who wanted to kill Sinestro, blast the door off of the cathedral where the guardians live. For some reason, all the guardians are just standing right in front of that doorway, like they didn't even want to bother to get anywhere deeper into their giant space cathedral to take Sinestro's ring off. No, they're doing it right in front of the door, right in front of the door.
Don't mind us, we're just crucifying the guy.
Well, you don't know. They could have been dragging him all over that that place. It just so happened that when they heard the violence going on outside, that they moved closer to the door.
Let's inch closer and closer to the door as I keep hearing these random shots being fired.
It's even stranger that, have you seen Kyle's eyes in this image?
Yeah, he has.
They are uneven, and they're looking in two different directions.
I think it's because it's either the guy started drawing pupils through the, you know, because sometimes there's like a stylistic thing when someone has completely white eyes, they draw pupils and retina through the whiteness when they're up close, you know? And maybe he started doing that, and the colorist wasn't really sure where the lines were, or the inker kind of messed up.
It could happen.
Chrono regrew his mustache after death. That was pretty awesome. Nice move, Chrono.
Skin back.
I think it's like Sharpie drew it on.
Well, you know, it's more than likely they're trying to get an image or, you know, how they want to remember him by, I guess. No, wait, no, you're right. You're right. I was thinking he was actually entirely green. I completely forgot. It actually is Chrono with a mustache.
Yeah.
Just floating there.
Yeah, that's cool. Whatevs. I don't know why Boudicca works for the Alpha Lion.
Someone drew it on with a...
Hilarious Green Lantern. Like, fuck you, asshole.
It was Solic. It was just there like...
It was Solic. That's why Mora was so upset.
It was probably Gantet, actually, because Gantet, like, you know, he was like, out of respect, he was like, you look better with a mustache, bro. I know you would have grown it back if you'd have had the time after your Malthusian rapping process. I know you wanted to grow that sweet stash back. So I'm just gonna... Actually, that's what he's doing in that first panel on that page. He's using his left hand to create a mustache on his face.
Yes.
And it's even better to give it to Atrocitus. He's like, look, he even has the mustache. Atrocitus, like, thank God. Because that, honestly, yeah, Murder Mask from a whole sector, that sucked. The mustache, that's what really bothered me the most. Honestly, I saw the mustache.
I just love the picture that Gantet just constricted a giant pencil, just drew it on his face.
Yeah. This is exactly what happened. I'm not even questioning it anymore.
I guess we have to talk about the cliffhanger.
Well,
something's behind... Something sinister is behind what's going on and stuff, and that's fine. I'm tired of these Guardians not getting their ass kicked. Every single one of these storylines looks like it's leading up to it's time for us to throw the Guardians out by their asses, and they never do. For like 4 years, they should have been throwing these guys out.
Yeah, it's been proven time and time again that they have faults, and they are susceptible to being either brainwashed or being overtaken or being or just being plain dicks when they feel like it.
Or in the last panel, it looks like they've been doing some heavy drugs. Jeez,
and
look at their eyes.
And like the whole premise of this aftermath, you know, it massaged my fears a little, because my whole problem was like, how can the events of the end of, you know, Green Lantern Corps War, how could they at all sit well with the Green Lanterns? And they just tried to show that there was some unrest, but then they're just two pages of the Guardians being like, shut the fuck up and do what we say, and everybody's like, okay, and they fly away. It's like, why would you even do that? I mean, honestly, I haven't seen it. I mean, it's one of those things where, yeah, they're the oldest race in the universe, and they fight crime for a living, and that's they're noble, et cetera. But I've not seen a single display of good character from them since Geoff Johns took over the title. Every time they show up, they're saying something really objectionable, or they're doing something completely wrong. You know, I mean, I don't even understand where the respect for these guys comes from. It's basically a bunch of little Nazis sitting there, and everyone just kind of saying how great they are and stuff. It's flabbergasting.
So last time they got revived, apparently they got really messed up.
Yeah, I guess Kyle, you know.
It wasn't Kyle's fault. Remember, they were all.
What was Gantet doing or teaching these kids?
Yeah, that was. It's really all Gantet's fault.
No, it's Kyle's fault, guys. It's got to be Kyle's fault. It can't be Gantet's fault. If it can be Kyle's fault, it's obviously Kyle's fault, right?
And can we just also say that Kyle, you know, it's obviously he has to do it, knocks out his own girlfriend, and then, I mean, if the next issue takes place after this, then we know why she's so angry at him. I mean, you know, she attacked first. That's totally fine. He punched her in the head and knocked her unconscious.
She attacked him.
She attacked first.
She did. I'm not saying he was in the wrong. He was obviously defending himself and stuff. But just, you know, maybe you see a little bit more of her anger's coming from. Though
anyone else want to come between me and my girlfriend? I am not your girlfriend.
And then she formed a giant dragon.
I wonder when that's what I mean. When I read this, I was a little confused, because it seemed like in the Green Lantern Corps issue, they were still dating. She was just not cool about it, and then they broke up at the end. And this one, specifically, she's like, I'm not dating you. And it's like,
she had dumped him, and he tried. They almost got back together, and then she's like, oh no, you didn't even see me? Oh snap.
I thought it was like a whole, they weren't sure, and he was like, what's going on?
Yeah,
it's like we hate each other, and she was like,
you know, well, I mean, I just don't want to do this. And
well, it could also be that there, well, that was the heat of the moment. Still confused about what was going on and their relationship.
No, I think Kyle was still confused. Sornik had obviously made up her mind.
Well, there's a weird point in this issue where you know, Kyle is talking to the guy and Kilowog, and he's saying he has no idea where this animosity is coming from, and he's like, well, you brought her dad. I guess that's totally why she's pissed off at you.
like, dude, you brought her dad into this. Like, how do you not get it, man?
And it's still the weirdest thing, because, again, every Green Lantern apparently goes like, yeah, they all know that's her dad.
You think there'd be more of an issue about that? I mean, it's a huge, huge, huge gap. Obviously, we discussed a million times that it was supposed to be a whole story point that nobody knew, and they just knew because Tony Bedard didn't bother to read the backlogs, and the editor didn't bother.
There's an issue where Kyle totally got over the whole killing his mom thing, and also Sornik made an announcement.
Right.
Anyway, so
for all we know, John said directly ignore it.
No, it was just off. It was off screen. It all happened.
It was 58.5. I just don't. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, whatever. I mean, I was kind of hoping that the Kyle Sinestro Sornik storyline would play out a little longer, and Tony Bedard was kind of talking about it like it would, but I think this is what he meant. That it was just going to make them break up, and Sornik was going to be her own person, and Sinestro was going to have his own title.
Yeah, I would have no problem with, like, you know, with Sornik breaking up with Kyle and being her own character, as long as she gets, you know, a good spotlight and actually, you know, embarks on the journey of becoming her own character in the books. I have no problem with that. The only real problem I have with is the way, again, that there is a giant gap missing of where it began. That there was a story element that was being formed, and then so quickly just forgotten, and then it just takes off right after a storyline that we never even saw.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's cool to see Kyle kick ass in this issue. I mean, even though he was doing it kind of passively, it was nice to see him win a couple of fights when Tony Bedard was writing him. I was really surprised. I was like, was he ghostwritten or was somebody else writing it with him or something? Like, but well, that's pretty cool.
Aside from that, how does everybody feel about the memorial for Mogo?
I think it's kind of grimy. I mean, they're like, oh, we're going to do the nicest thing we can think of, throw him in the sun. It's like, but that's also what you do to your worst enemy, like, you kill him, you throw him in the sun.
that's what they did to Krona in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what they did in both movies, right? Didn't they? They knocked in the black hole sun in Emerald Knights and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's like, they're like, let's do what we do to all our space trash, throw it in the sun.
Yeah. Superboy Prime, same thing.
And like, I guess the idea is that, like, you know, I mean, it's unclear in the art, really, but you know, that the sun, you know, gets a Green Lantern ring around it, and that's cute, I guess. But
I guess, to be fair, both Hal and Ion sacrificed themselves to the sun.
Yeah, but I mean, Hal died, and Ion was trapped there forever, so it's kind of like they should have bad memories for them, is what they're trying to say. And honestly, I mean, you know, if we think too hard about it, you know, it doesn't really make any sense that a big Green Lantern ring around the sun. If there is, then that means Mogo might have had some sentience left, and they just threw their best friend into the sun to die.
His last
action was to try to send out a distress signal. Like,
I'm dying. It burns.
Guys, I'm still alive. I'm still alive. Oh, God.
I mean, why didn't they try to do what John has done, you know, and put the planet back together and stuff? I mean, wouldn't that be the ultimate tribute to your dead friend to bring him back to life?
Yeah, I mean, Green Lanterns have done it before. Don't get me wrong. Green Lanterns were able to take space debris and form it into a planet.
You know what else? Why couldn't one of the Star Sapphires show up and just find someone who really liked Mogo and make a heart connection and bring him back to life?
I'm sure. Didn't St. Walker once say something about reviving planets with hope?
No, yeah, and, you know, they make suns young again. They can make suns young again, but they can't bring debris back together. Now, there's too many
aged to death. He blew up.
Yeah, but still, even Kyle got blown up, and he was brought back by the love.
No. His costume got sort of shredded. He was perfect.
He just passed out.
You know, they could always go with the route with this being a symbol for that Mogo be reborn as Oa's son.
Well, yeah, I was eventually gonna mention that this is probably, you know, as speculating the fact that there's a Green Lantern now ring around a sun.
A Green Lantern sun would be a great idea, except that, you know, it literally couldn't go anywhere without destroying an entire universe.
Exactly,
yeah.
Because if it moves, you just threw that entire system out of whack.
Okay, to be fair though, Mogo spent most of his time flying to Oa.
Yeah, well, that was like that.
How much damage did he do?
No, but again, that's a solar system. That's a planet, and
most of the time, Mogo just left his sector and just hung out at Oa anyway. So might as well just not be able to leave Oa.
We can assume that. We can also
as the resident physics guy, I can honestly say that even if it's just a planet, that thing leaving its system would screw up the gravity of its own system, throwing all of its planets either out of whack or into the sun or out of space.
I like how you call yourself the resident physics guy, and I think you've disproven that frequently every time we have a discussion about physics. I just want to say that it would take them millions of years or hundreds of years to get Mogo to the sun if they just flew there. So obviously they use some wormholes and stuff. I guess we got to assume and stuff. But I'm just, you know, not that Green Lantern is particularly science based. It just kind of pisses me off when they have such blatant science bullshit happening. You know, like, I mean, come on.
It's supposed to be pursuit of science. It's supposed to be like, you know.
It's supposed to be a goodbye to Mogo. That's the point.
Hey, if they wanted a goodbye to Mogo, they should never have blown his ass up.
I don't think it was particularly goodbye. I think there's too many holes.
I still miss the giant tree dedicated to all the fallen Green Lanterns that was on Mogo.
Yeah, that's like, when did they move the crypt back to?
What about all the Black Lanterns that were, well, I guess they were probably all destroyed when Necron was defeated, but then no, because then Firestorms, Deathstorm is still running around. So all the Black Lanterns that were at the core being constantly melted, that John tapped into to destroy Mogo, wouldn't they still be running around? I mean, they still existed. And
well, they got thrown into the sun.
Remember.
No, but they don't die from that. They come. They can fly right out.
When Mogo blew up and Tony Bedard's and eyes, it's gone now. All that power is circulating. It's gone, apparently, because, you know, I didn't really read what was going on.
It just got fixed. Shut up.
And, like, the problem with the whole thing is the rings were choosing people generally, and then them introducing Mogo as a conduit for how it was choosing people. You know, I mean, I've defended the idea before. Overall, it's a stupid idea because it relies on one moral compass to tell. And it's fine, actually. It kind of helps to explain it. The problem is then you run into the issue of you never explained what it was doing before Mogo, and now the Guardians seem confused how it works in the first place, even though they invented
They would also invent the rings.
Why don't they know what's going on? I mean, they're kind of like, it chose him somehow for a reason. It's like, I mean, is there going to be any point, and I know there's not, but shouldn't there be a point where everybody sits and explains, like, exactly what the different, you know, what the different aspects of this is, you know?
Well, remember, as far as we know, the original inventor and designer of the Green Lantern power rings was Krona.
Oh, so that's the argument now that they don't know how it works. And
apparently, that has to be the case because again, shown back, I forget what issue it was, but in Krona and the Power Gauntlet, Krona was the inventor of the Green Lantern battery and ring. Basically, he was the first prototype. It was the first the gauntlet.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like,
but they created the ring. He created the gauntlet.
Completely
the prototype.
Completely afterwards, we have no idea. No, they didn't create the ring. The rings was part of the gauntlet.
Well, so I think they imply that he's the one who created all the rings.
So basically, the design and the invention of it could have just been lying around, and they just took it from there.
Well, I think I think it's just stupid because then you don't build the same car for millions of years and then not know how it works.
Completely understandable. But again, as far as Jeff Johns and Toby Darge is concerned, these guys have been around millions of years, but apparently all their knowledge is based off of like 10 years of memory.
And is it an ion-based thing then? Because you got to think about, like, obviously Krona took over the entire core, and that was never quite explained how he did it, presumably because Parallax was in the battery or something, right? But he was always in the battery, so how was he able to do it now, not before?
Well, because
Krona was actively making him do it. But
no, Parallax wasn't awake during the time when he was in the battery. And the time when he was actually, you know, taken back into the four separate batteries, it was, again, split it apart, four separate batteries. He couldn't control anyone because he wasn't whole. So
why would he want to be? Then why did he free himself from the battery by destroying it? Why didn't he? When Sinestro talked to him in the battery, why didn't he just stay in the battery and take over all the Green Lanterns within the battery?
Again, he was just slowly nudging him into influence. He wasn't awake when he was talking to him in the battery. He was just slowly nudging him into influence, as they were saying, as it was explained by Jeff Johns during Rebirth.
Right. I just thought also because then if Parallax was in Hal and had an omnipotent power, then why didn't he just put the battery back together, or why didn't he make more rings and control more people, or why, I don't know. And why can he do, I don't know, it's just the whole Parallax thing doesn't make any sense in the long run, because
right,
Parallax literally took reality and moved it, you know, and
now, yeah, because again, the rules are being changed as it's going along. It's like, you know, they have different storylines and they want to do different things with it, so they pretty much are making things up as they go.
Think about Parallax as Hal Jordan reignited the sun, and he died in the process, and yet Ion was able to do it, no problem. Didn't even have an injury. Was just stuck in the sun having to keep doing it, you know, and then we just take it out of the sun. you know, that was fine. Or he was fine, no problem whatsoever. So, yeah, it's completely inconsistent. So it's kind of like, what's the point of even introducing these ideas? I don't know. Do we think that the end is supposed to imply that the Guardians are being possessed by Krona, or that Krona is still alive somehow?
In a way, again, this is all speculation on our part. It does seem in a way that they are being, again, either one being Hurst to do something again, that they're being persuaded to, like, do evil once more. But, again, we won't know until next Green Lantern number one comes out.
I think it's probably, to me, they're kind of implying white entity stuff. And also that makes sense with Sinestro and everything, because Sinestro was picked by the white entity to be the white supremacist lantern and stuff. So, I mean, there's probably some white entity bullshit, which means, unfortunately, all that Brightest Day shit.
Well, before that, the Book of Black said he would be the greatest Green Lantern. So
again, yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, well, I don't think it's a possession thing at all. I think they came to what they would assume is a rational decision to do this, whatever they're doing to Gantt. And I think they just made that collectively and said, hey, Gantt, we're about to fuck you up.
Right now.
Good old schoolyard brawl like we did back in Maltese.
I think it was just...
Sorry, Dad.
I thought the eyeballs being colored, I mean, white, was deliberate. I mean, obviously they had white issues throughout the rest of the issue. But it looked like – I thought it was a deliberate kind of drawing that they specifically highlighted all their, you know.
No, I think this goes back to what I was talking about earlier, that the seven inkers and Andy Smith aren't very good.
I think it's supposed to imply that. It's supposed to be creepy and you're not supposed to know what. And honestly, if it was just a panel of Guardians going to grab Gantt and saying no, it wouldn't end with the creepy last panel like that, because it wouldn't be creepy. It would just be them being menacing, you know, as opposed to be
– Out of all the pages in this issue, I thought that was the worst one. Because, like, you can't end on that tiny little panel like that. That was awful.
No, it actually ended on a tinier little panel with just floating Mogo with Ring on it. It's like, I don't know. So it's supposed to be mysterious because we don't
see
what
happens.
How
long is that going
to
be there, honestly?
And what does it do with the battery? Every time I fucking see it, it's at a different part of the goddamn OA. I mean,
it teleports.
It's been a cataclysmic event. It's a fucking brand new spot. I mean, how fucking stupid do these artists be, man?
That's part of John's new
design. It's these editors, man. It's the fucking editors. Don't give a shit. They're not paying attention. There's a certain level where they're not paying attention because they're revamping to the 52. But that's a pretty recent idea. This just means that all those editors are still working, and they still suck.
I think part of that goes on – sorry for interrupting. But I think that part of that goes for the artists, you know, because if you look at Pete Woods during the whole World of New Krypton thing, that guy had 3D layouts of the entire planet of Krypton from each set, and it's like you'll see that, and you see that reflected in the book.
I mean, that's fine, but isn't there somebody who's planned it out already who they can just use all of their designs? I know webcomic artists who put more planning to their comics than this.
No, I mean, well, for New Krypton as an example, they had a whole Bible about, you know,
Bible,
everything,
too.
Yeah. And, like, yeah, and they had, like, you know, and when Greg Rucka started writing World of New Krypton and started talking about the class systems and stuff, that was what everybody was supposed to be referencing. And, you know, when he started up with the Flamebird religion, that was what everybody was supposed to be referencing. And it didn't really work out like that, but, you know, that was what it was supposed to be. By the end, it was supposed to all be internally consistent and make a certain amount of sense and stuff. And it worked more or less, you know, but, I mean, it definitely works more than this. I don't think I even said that I actually like this issue. I mean, I think there was some good legitimate drama, and I think there was some storylines coming to a head, and I think it dealt with a lot of different lanterns in a really interesting way, and obviously it featured Kyle, so I was biased towards it and stuff, and it showed the kind of, like, reason to have Kyle in a team atmosphere, you know, because he's a strong-headed person, center, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I mean, it was good to see so many other lanterns running around, like Vath, and, you know, and I people kind of complained.
Yeah,
Raker. What shirt is Raker wearing? And Raker shouldn't be.
I have to say right now, seeing the fact, again, Raker was introduced back in, like, the late 90s.
The 90s, yeah, his first appearance.
And he was such a different character than he is now.
That freaking mustache.
Yeah, he's seeing Raker now. It's the weirdest thing, because my new favorite panel for this entire book has to be Raker standing at the controls for the door. For the cathedral, he's just going, I'm not finding any of the controls for the door. How do we get in? And he just the look on his face, ridiculous.
You look stupid.
But the thing is, like, you're a Manhunter robot that was turned into a Green Lantern.
Raker?
Yes, he's a Manhunter robot. He has an internal power battery in him. He was.
I thought Raker was the fourth world Green Lantern.
He is a fourth world Green Lantern.
He was
a Manhunter robot created as a Green Lantern. He was the first of his kind. He was basically the first Alpha Lantern, basically. But his entire story is completely rewritten now. He's basically a living entity without the power battery. Because originally, if you read the Fourth World book where he was in, at the very last chapter of the book, he still has his Green Lantern ring. And it still works. Still works because he is an internal battery. He is a battery itself. He is a battery of his own kind.
I do.
So,
Say it again, Dalton.
So some random story just references at some point. It just won't be out of the left field. It'll be what his original story was.
Right.
I don't know. Someone says LeBreaker isn't that guy Jeff Johns?
I did. Where is this story from? Because from what I understand, the only times I ever saw Raker were besides the background appearances, the two one shots, and that was not mentioned in the one shots.
And which one shot? You're talking about the original one shot?
The original one, and then the second one when he showed up a couple times in the Orion series and stuff.
No, I didn't read the Orion series. I mean, the one shot that I'm talking about is the one where Kyle and Orion get stranded on Apocalypse, and they find Raker.
Yeah, they didn't mention him being a Manhunter. He was
that's what you're supposed. It's basically implied at the end of the story.
Was it?
Yep.
I didn't know that was canon. I mean, I'm looking at the Green Lantern Wiki right now, and it doesn't mention any of that stuff.
It's a great radio, guys.
I guess you should update that then. Back to this book, and talking a bit about the future, I guess. The problem I had with this issue is that it left so many questions that will not get answered. It's like wrapping up stories. Like, we got that wrap up from
the Wrap It Up B. Wrap It Up
guy's name. Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason with the bar closing, and that wrapped up all those feelings, and that was a tight ending. This, it feels like, hey, John, Guy and Kyle are going their separate ways. Kyle, go back to Earth, blah, blah, blah. But you just drastically ended his relationship. We don't know how he's feeling about that. You just put Guy Gardner on vacation now, because if we read this in order, we know that he's on vacation now. Like, this whole post-war thing has just been an awful mess, and it doesn't lead into September at all. And I guess for new readers, that's perfect, because hopefully those number one issues would be a great jumping on point. But for me to be excited for next month's comics, this did a shitty job. This is the perfect jumping off point, and I'm sad.
And that's why all of us are jumping off of Green Lantern next month.
I think the closing issues of the core were terrible. I mean, yeah, they were good conclusive issues, but they did not seem like they made me want to read the next issues. They made me seem like I shouldn't have to read the other issues again. And I'm okay with that, and I think this is good enough to wrap a bunch of stuff, but it sets up a bunch of cliffhanger-y things. And I think knowing what's going on in the future, that Kyle's getting a team booked, and that a bunch of the more disgruntled Lanterns are going to be on the other side of the universe actually doing some crime-fighting and stuff, like, this sets that up pretty well. I mean, if you like the dynamic of Sornik being angry and John Stewart being angry and everyone kind of hating each other, you're going to like Green Lantern and Emerald Warriors or whatever I think Core is the one that Tomasi is writing, right?
Core.
And if you like Kyle's steadfast morality and the fact that he's been surrounded by a bunch of shitty dudes, you know, then obviously you're going to like New Guardians and stuff.
But almost where, felt like this was the pilot for that. We got two, maybe three pages of Ganthet saying, I'm so sad, and him still ignoring St. Walker. Like, St. Walker is, like, the most blunt person in the world right now.
He's like, yo, man, come back to the planet, lead the Blue Lantern Corps, get your girlfriend back, it's cool. He's like, I don't know about you.
There's nothing stopping him from going after Sade. Like, why are we still here, Ganthet?
He doesn't know where Sade is. I thought that was the whole thing. He doesn't know anything about
him. He's a guardian.
He is a guardian. And the fact of the matter is, Larfleeze was standing right there before all the guardians vanished them off the planet.
Well, that's very unclear. What's going on with Sade is very unclear at all. I mean,
there's no plot.
And it's been very much so like, the only time they ever mentioned it was the last issue where he's like, oh, I missed you and I don't know where you are and you're on some kind of secret mission. And that's it. I mean, it's kind of like had no points since then. I mean, offhandedly, I think people have mentioned, I think editors, I feel like one character mentioned in one storyline, Saeed's off on a mission or something. Larfleet said it offhandedly, but other than that, it's kind of been a mystery where she is and stuff. I just don't think, I think he misses her, but I think the idea is that he's not going after her because he's got more important shit to do here. I mean,
but
you know,
he doesn't. He has absolutely no ties.
It's so weird. No, it's so weird.
About it. He spends like six pages talking about how he's tied to the Green Lantern Corps. He doesn't want to be a Guardian anymore. I mean,
it's a weird element after that. It's a weird element every time that they try to explain off why Gansley doesn't do these things, especially when they randomly bring new plot points with the fact that him, Atrocitus and Gygarner did an entire pact to try to prevent a war from happening. And then after this entire war actually still happened, he's like, I can't leave because there's still going to be another war, worse than we've ever seen before if I leave. And, you know, Atrocitus will probably be the head of that. And it's still such a weird story point because, again, there's nothing being shown.
Yeah. He needs to die. Ganthet needs to die because right now
no the other Guardians need to
more
die.
Problems than he's solving.
Ganthet needs to lose his hand and then gain it back. Oh wait,
no. What Ganthet needs to do is lose an eye, have a kick-ass scar on it, and do that in whole post crazy Kyle Rayner freaking dream Green Lantern Corps that they did.
He needs to become Nick Fury.
No, I like this final because Ganthet. I mean, it took him like 2 years or however long when he was writing the title. When they started the title, he obviously broke off from the. You know, recently, obviously broke off to start the Blue Lantern Corps, and then there's kind of, I mean, there's not a lot of clarity what's going on there is kind of the issue. But, I mean, at this point, I think they're establishing that. At this point, he's firmly established as a Guardian who wants to be Green Lantern and is adverse to the Guardians in general and stuff. So, I mean, it's kind of silly that the cliffhanger works the way it does because obviously he's getting pulled right back into intrinsic Guardian politics and shit, even though, you know, we were kind of promised a Guardian Green Lantern in Ganthet, and all we really saw him do was get his ass kicked by the Weaponer, and that was it. I mean, you know, and, you know, never really kind of clarify why he needed a ring, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and stuff. So,
yeah, it was supposed to be like the veteran.
My only problem with the cliffhanger is that it throws him right back into the same shit he's been in, as opposed to what he should be doing, which is, you know, being more involved in maybe the Green Lantern Corps title or hanging out with Kyle or going back to the Blue Lanterns and just getting
That is the only thing he needs to be doing. He created the Blue Lanterns, or the Blue Lantern Corps before this war. And
No. Jeff Johns created the Blue Lantern Corps.
No. But I think there's plenty of arguments that could be made that he should be going back to the Blue Lantern Corps, but at this point it's firmly established that he's left that behind for now and he's not interested in continuing that for now.
I don't think it's firmly accepted. I think Gantz's mindset is, I'm not going back right now. I'm focused on the Green Lantern Corps. Sure, but that doesn't give me, the reader, any satisfaction. That leaves St. Walker high and dry.
I agree. There should be some more clarification what's going on there. But I also think there should be clarification of what the Red Lanterns do all day, you know, and what Larfleet does all day. I mean, how do you just sit there with rings? I mean, you just sit there and throw out blood? You just sit there and are hopeful?
Remember, for the last millions of years or so, that's all Larfleet did.
Well, show me some storylines where the Blue Lanterns are doing missionary work, you know. Show me some storylines where the Sapphires aren't.
Why would they do that? Why would they do missionary work? We don't have that much of a mission statement from them for them to go out and say, hey, let's do this. If we were to see Brother Worf out there saving someone, it would be on his own accord because of his own morals, not because of any instilled values that Gansey put on
I think they have a certain, I mean, there's no, I don't think there's like a code of conduct and stuff, but I think they've had a certain instilled idea. And I thought the whole idea was that Gansey had said, like, I'm not any better than any of you. I just started it, but I'm just like you and you're just like me kind of a thing. So any one person can lead the core. It's not like that kind of a thing, you know. So
him leading it to go.
It's kind of like a, you know, like a commune thing. He's like, we don't need a leader. You guys can just lead yourselves. And again, I think all they do
would be perfectly fine if he were to say that.
And if it
but
was shown.
He's avoiding that. He's blatantly avoiding the Blue Lantern Corps, and that's fucking upsetting.
Well, you know what? We've discussed enough on the fact of the aftermath issues. Most of us, you know, enjoyed the issues. Some of us weren't completely satisfied with the way things have ended. I personally can't say I like the artwork for this issue, and most of the different plot points that were happening in the story were, again, confusing as hell. But you know what? It's it's the end of that. You know, the end of Aftermath. We're going to get a brand new story.
Wasn't the whole thing with, just thinking back, Ganthet's whole thing was that the reason he broke off from everybody in the first place was because he was having some kind of subterfuge shit happening with Krona and he didn't want to tell anybody about it.
Right.
And then he says to St. Walker, he's like, well, as soon as I give Krona back to Trossos, I'm going to go back and figure out what's going on with you guys and try to find Saeed and stuff. Because he says to St. Walker, he's like, the only thing I want to do is find Saeed, but I have to do one more thing first. So, I mean, if anything, it's kind of like he's saying he's going to do exactly what Wes is asking him to do. He's just now he's been kidnapped by the Guardians or whatever's going on.
No, it came off as a bullshit excuse to hang around.
My only problem is that it doesn't make any sense. The pact
for him to seal that pact, it's not going to make Atrocitus less angry.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that. I just mean the pact in the first. I've always complained about them having a big secret pact. What was their big secret pact? And it turned out the big secret pact was just to team up and fight Krona when they weren't even sure that it was Krona, you know, and it was kind of like, and they never really told you flat out what their big secret pact was. You just know they had a big secret pact, but why was it a secret? Why didn't they tell anybody? Why didn't they get any help? And well, I don't think they had that concern.
It's like the forbidden spell or something like that in Harry Potter where Snape has to take this spell to save Draco Malfoy and help him no matter what. And if he doesn't, he
dies. Unbreakable vow or something.
Yeah.
Well, no, I understand, but why? And I think the argument is that, well, Atrocitus had intel that they couldn't get anywhere else, and they knew that the only way they'd get Atrocitus' agree if Atrocitus didn't think they were along with it and stuff. And, you know, it's just that's fine, but what was his intel and what did it really add to it?
Actual intel actually being
given. I feel like what ended up happening was Krona just attacked everyone and they fought him and lost. Like,
all your intel.
They were trying to be very clever as to saying, like, you know, we're going to try to be prepared for the next war that eventually comes, and we're going to try to gather our forces, but yet again it went into this whole weird Gansley, Guy Gardner, and Atrocitus joined a secret pact and did nothing to gather their forces, nothing to prepare themselves.
And there's Zardor out there, right? Naked guy who was like working with Krona, and now where's he? Like, didn't he just essentially do all the same stuff Krona did? He mind controlled people and stuff, and you know, where's he? Maybe he's the guy behind all this shit, but I doubt it. I mean, I don't think they really thought it out that far.
It's weird. Yeah. Anyway, and again, we have gone a little bit long on our thoughts. So you know what? Thank you for listening. And stay tuned for our next show coming out. Till then, may all be well with green.
If anybody's actually listening to the podcast, you could please go to the website at greenlandercore.com and find the CoreCast section and just comment, because we're going to do a couple of theme episodes coming up, and we're trying to figure out what topics. So if you have anything to suggest, please do.
Also, if any of you actually know if Riker was a man or a robot, also write it down there.
I believe I sent you a link that explained that he wasn't, but that's fine.
I'm completely sure he was a man or a robot.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at @GLCorps.
And be sure to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GLSpotlight.
You can reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814.
Thanks for listening, and check us out next time, and please stop masturbating when I'm talking to you.
Don't forget to check out Kirby Crackle, the performance of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at KirbyCracklemusic.com. Also check out the Roy Clark Method, the performance of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at freeweb.com/RoyClarkMethod.
This magic green, it is the color green, it can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me, it says, how, what?